What up, my fellow inquirers? It's your boy T-Hide coming at you with episode 2 of the podcast. Little disclaimer before we get into it. We had audio error while recording. And we lost about 16 minutes of audio. So after about a minute in, there's a sudden jump in topic and discussion. So I apologize for that. But we still came out with a good hour and 20 minutes of solid content. So I figured it wasn't really worth re-recording. I do plan on having the guest back on again eventually. So, again, sorry about that. Also want to do a quick little social media plug. You can find the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. Just search The Inquisitive Gentleman. Or if you have any questions or comments, you can email me at theinquisitivegentleman@gmail.com. And I plan to be more active on social media, and I just want to share interesting content, maybe generate discussion amongst the community. And I also wanted to give a couple special shout-outs. So, first one goes out to my beautiful wife, just mainly for dealing with me, because that's a task all on its own, and also for being there with me and supporting me through my podcasting endeavor. Also want to give a shout-out to my boy Brandon Ide for, one, making my logo for the podcast, so thank you very much for that. And he also has his own podcast that he just recently started here on Anchor. So just search Enjoy the Ride. And it's basically just a little podcast about his daily adventures. He calls and interviews his friends and just talks about stuff he goes through every day. And last but not least, I want to give a special shout out to a good friend of mine. If you're interested in streaming at all, and you like casual streaming, and you like just a laid-back, chill environment, look for Blue Griff on Twitch. And she's a casual gamer, a good friend of mine, one of my main hype people. So go ahead, search her on that, or look for Blue Griff on Twitter. My guest today is Austin Ostermiller. He has a degree in sports science. He is a personal trainer and a powerlifter. And an all-around swell guy. A pretty cool cat. So let's get into it.
Okay, we're going?
We're going.
We're live. Awesome. So, I was born in Toledo, Ohio.
I didn't know you're from Ohio.
Yep.
See, already.
We're already learning. Exactly. So, lived there for 5 years, then moved to Michigan, Tecumseh, Michigan. Went through that school system, graduated in 2011. Went to Bowling Green State University for a year. Decided I didn't have the funds to pay for that. Went to Jackson College for a year, then went to Central Michigan, where it took me 4 more years to finish my bachelor's degree. But I did it. I have a degree in exercise science. I am a strength and conditioning coach and a personal trainer. I work at Mission in Adrian. And then,
well, that's, music is, I think, a big thing in everybody's life. Everybody has, there's certain songs that trigger those memories and you have that nostalgia trip.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I asked a lot of kids, like, hey, what kind of music do you listen to? And I've heard several kids say, oh, I don't really listen to music. And that's cool, like, but it blew my mind. I'd never heard of anyone just not listening to music before. Mm-hmm. Like, not having at least a couple artists at hand that you just listen to.
I'm kind of the same way, but I don't, well, not with music, but I really don't watch TV.
Yeah, I've heard that.
There's a lot of people that are like, oh, you should watch this. It's like,
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, but see, it's kind of like reading to me. I don't like sitting down to do, I mean, unless it's like at the end of a night.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Katie and I will watch a movie, or we've been watching Monk recently.
Okay, yeah.
I'm digging the Monk. I'm liking that.
Monk is pretty good show.
I've only seen a
few episodes, but I've liked what I've seen.
But yeah, we'll do that like late at night before we go to bed.
Yeah.
And so that also gives us time together because Molly's asleep, mm-hmm. and we get some time together. But other than that, I don't really. I have a hard time venturing out when it comes to movies and stuff like that, because I have to dedicate my time to sitting there and watching it to make sure I don't miss it. You know, it's kind of that same way I look at reading.
Yeah.
I have to sit here and read it instead of being able to move around and continue doing my thing while also doing it, because I'm trying to help teach myself to multitask better, too.
Right. If I'm, I mean, I'll go on Netflix and I'll use it more as like a decompression type deal, like to just, if I need to relax and not do anything, I'll put something on. So, I mean, I've seen The Office 20 times through, you know, I'm one of those basic people, but I've seen a couple of shows where just like at the end of the day, I'll watch a couple episodes and go to sleep, and I'll do that for a little bit until it's over, and I'll probably rewatch The Office or Parks and Recreation again until I find something new. But in the middle, I'm at the end of the last season of Stranger Things right now that just came out.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
Is it good?
I'm enjoying it a lot, yeah.
I'm supposed to watch it with my mom.
Yeah?
Yeah, we were supposed to watch it last week when it came out, but we wound up having to do other things instead.
Yeah.
So, and I've been holding off from watching it.
That's
but
nice.
It's like, today, I'm watching it today. I can't wait no longer.
Yeah.
I gotta know.
No, it's good.
What kind of music do you listen to? Ooh. I know you have, well, at the gym, I know when you have control of the music.
Yeah, so...
It's a wide variety, which
it is.
I appreciate that. I think having a wide variety of music and having different tastes of music is really important for people instead of just being stuck in one specific genre.
Yeah, why do you feel that way?
It depends. Culturally, I guess. Because I grew up listening to a lot of rap.
Yeah.
That's mainly what I've always listened to. But I also like alternative rock and roll. A lot of 90s alternative. I'm recently getting more into 80s music.
Oh, yeah.
I never really liked 80s music. But I like jazz. I like blues.
Mm-hmm.
Some country, not really.
Yeah.
It's just... But see, I like music because I like hearing the artist's perspective of things.
Yeah.
And I think if you hear from different people from different genres, a lot of times, depending on what it is, depending on the artist, that's what I look for in music, what the message is.
Yeah.
And hearing, you know, kind of like the podcast, what people are going through.
Right.
Because
I mean,
whether they're at this certain point in their life on this pedestal that we hold celebrities and artists and stuff to, that at the end of the day, they're still just regular people.
Yeah, they had to be normal problems. At some point.
Exactly. You know, look at, you know, Eminem, who's, everybody's, oh, Eminem, but, you know, he's one of my favorite artists, for one, because he's from Michigan.
Right.
So that's cool.
It's pretty cool.
But just hearing, you know, his side and his lyrics and everything else, it's just, I like hearing that. I can appreciate the authenticity.
Yeah. The artistry of it. So, yeah, so, my musical taste, it's pretty all over the place. It's been, I think some people have used the words eclectic, to describe it. It's a little funky, but basically, it just relates to how I grew up. So my mom was in musical theater growing up. Like, she played Annie in Toledo's theater system. She was Annie, and she was also in a couple of commercials. She was a really good actress, and she still is a phenomenal singer, and she was a great dancer as well. So kind of have that background, and she really liked, 80s music. And some 90s, we listened to, oh gosh, who we listened to a lot. We listened to disco too, like just all over the place. Fiona Apple was someone.
Fiona Apple,
exactly. And I showed my mom Bishop Briggs, if you know
really?
Who that is. And she's like, Austin, I just having my headphones on and listening to that song you showed me when I'm doing my work. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, Mom. She's like, I put my Beats on. I feel so cool.
My mom
is awesome. I love her so much. And then I'll have, like, the musical theater background of, like, appreciating show tunes like Grease and that sort of thing. And then my dad, he really liked, he was a punk rocker kind of growing up, like leather jacket, smoking cigarettes behind the school. His mom was an English teacher, like my grandmother was an English teacher, and so he listened to Judas Priest and R.A.T.T. and Dead Kennedys. So I play a lot of, I have I have Dead Kennedys on my gym playlist when you guys are there, which might not be the great. And I really hope no one I hope nobody asks me, like a 65-year-old doesn't ask me, oh, who is this artist? I don't want to say, oh, it's Dead Kennedys, you know. But I really like them. And then I had an older brother, and he was a phenomenal musician as well. He was the musical talent in the family, so played like concert piano starting at age 4 or 5, and played. He could play any instrument that you handed to him. So he played drums in a band. He played bass in a band. Could play the guitar. He's really excellent at piano. Really, really phenomenal musician. So when he was growing up, I got all of his tastes. So I would listen to. And he was a delinquent, you know, like every other middle school boy. So like that's where I got Eminem from. I would listen to Busta Rhymes, Dr. Dre, and then Gorillaz. If you know Gorillaz, Clint Eastwood is still
classic.
That still just goes hard.
I gotta listen to it every, you know. I keep it in my YouTube because I'm a big YouTube fanatic.
Yeah, that's me where too.
Now I got YouTube Premium.
Nice.
So now I can actually shut my screen off while listening to music, because that's what I usually do when I'm at work.
Is that a game changer for you?
It definitely is.
Yeah.
It's definitely better than Pandora, too.
Yeah.
I said bye-bye to Pandora.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'll do, in my search history, it's like, there it is, Clint Eastwood by Gorillaz. I'll click it on, and,
number one. That's such a great song. So, that's Gorillaz is up there for me, but then... Rage Against the Machine, and like those sort of bands, and also my dad and my brother were Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Queen,
Ramones.
Ramones a little bit. That was kind of my base. My base was hip hop, 80s music, show tunes, and like punk. So it was an interesting start. And then going through high school, I had friends that listened to alternative, so I would listen to Blink-182. Sum 41 was another big one that my brother got me into. Sum 41. And then kind of later on, I would get into a little bit more hip-hop, like Lupe Fiasco is up there. I really like Run the Jewels right now. They're pretty sick. I love Run the Jewels.
I like Killer Mike in general.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character.
He was really, really I don't agree with everything he says, but I value what he's trying to do with his platform, and his music is fun.
That's, you know, I think that's where society falls down as a whole, is, you know, with Killer Mike, you just said right there, I don't agree with everything he says, but I can appreciate he's using his platform. And that's what people really need to look at, because I know, especially even just amongst my friends, a lot of our beliefs don't really mesh up, but we can sit down and have a discussion or talk about something and disagree, but it's not going to be, oh, well, you know, you're this, and we're not going to throw labels at each other, and it's just people don't ever come together to discuss.
Yeah.
People just want to argue, I feel.
Yeah, that's true. And like, I have a friend who we have pretty opposite political beliefs, and our experiences are different, and that's what it is. And we don't talk about it. We know we're not gonna agree, so it's not necessary to talk. We just are friends at that level. We can talk about it. We're not gonna. We've already heard each other's talking points. I think we just, all right, these are your experiences, so you feel this way, that's cool, these are my experiences, I feel this way. Probably, I mean, they're not going to change a whole lot, and we can still be friends. Like, it doesn't, we know we're opposites here, but right. We can still put those aside and play, like, we've played Minecraft in each other's basements. Like,
right.
That fundamental relationship is not going to be damaged by political ideologies. I think we're seeing that a little bit. And some things, like, I can understand if your morals are different, then you can't if the base morality is different than yours and you don't want to associate yourself with that person, then that's fine too. You know, like, if your ideals don't line up, I think life's a little too short to be around people that make you feel heightened all the time, or
right.
that you feel like you're being judged for being someone else, for having different ideals. So I can understand both wanting to have a discussion and also avoiding it entirely, because your energy is valuable.
Yeah.
Putting it where you want to put it, as opposed to where you feel like you have to put it, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I have friends that range from extremely religious to not religious at all.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
people who are ultra conservative and people who are ultra liberal.
Yeah.
It's a lot can be learned from everybody, I feel.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as I was saying, that's the point of the podcast, is I want to hear people from every different aspect of life. Everybody has a story. Everybody has a reason to do something.
It's true.
And I think everybody should have an ability to speak their mind and say whatever they think they needs to be said.
Yeah. If they want to.
And, yeah. Well, I mean, I also want to keep it positive, too.
True.
That's the thing. I'm trying to spread the positivity and...
Positive.
I don't want someone to come in here like, everybody sucks, burn the world. It's like, I'm not into that, but sorry. But, and you have people like that, but at the
same
time...
Start.
You also Fight Club it. One of my favorite movies is Fight Club.
Yeah, it's great. That's a really good movie. I like it as well.
And I feel like even with people that are stuck in negative positions in their life, you have to understand those people. For one, for your own protection, so you can understand how you can get into that mindset and that way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you have to understand, like, okay, they're just... Whether they've gone through something that's not as traumatic as what I've gone through, everything affects everybody differently.
Yeah.
So you can't get down on somebody because they're in a rough spot in their life and they can't seem to get out of it.
Yeah.
Even if something trivial happens.
True. I mean...
Trivial to you, it may be trivial to you, but it may be detrimental to them.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you shouldn't judge people based off of kind of where they are. I think that's really important, just because experiences are different, and that's what you're saying. Everyone has their environmental surroundings growing up is everyone's different, and then brain, like, neurological activity is just different from birth. Some you can raise two kids the exact same way and they're gonna grow up probably being fundamentally different in a lot of different ways. It's very interesting, and kind of freaky a little bit, especially if you plan on raising children. This seems like kind of a crapshoot in terms of how you treat them, but you just do your best and see how it works out.
Yeah, and that's really what I've pulled away from parenting is, you know, there's books out there that can tell you what to do. There's everybody has their own opinion, and that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is people who aren't parents that try to tell me how to parent.
Yeah,
it's
I'd imagine.
It's like, okay, first off, stay in your lane, because you're not a parent.
Right.
And also, I've had people who have their children are older and they've grown up. They've told me, nobody knows. There's no right answer on how to raise your kids.
Exactly.
But...
I think there are wrong answers.
Yes, there are wrong. There are definitely wrong ones. But how you teach them, and how you help them learn and develop, it's based on them. However, they receive information and help store it. I mean, I think the right way to raise a kid is to be very encouraging, and loving, and understanding.
Yeah.
While also. Because you have to be disciplinary too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just let your kids run crazy.
Right. Yeah.
You do have to. You do have to set limits. And but, you know, I think a lot of punishment in general needs to be kind of looked at a little differently.
True. True. There's what are they going to affiliate that punishment with, later on in life? Like, it could be traumatic having some of these issues going on.
I think a lot of that has is affected with even like drug offenses and stuff like that. Instead of just throwing them in jail and letting them sit there just to get mad, they get out. You know, they have drug charges on their record. They don't really have the help that they need. It's kind of how it is in this area too. So they get mad, they get out of jail, and they do drugs about it because they're mad. And there's really not education about it. It's more focused on you're taking them away from the drug for a while, but when they get back out, they have access to it again.
Well, yeah.
Rather than, you know, I think the punitive approach needs to be looked at differently.
Yes. So, I mean, I think the prison system is messed up. I think a lot of Americans feel the same way in regards to what the prisons are designed for. I think they make people too much money without actually providing a service. Prisoners don't come out better. They come out with like no opportunities, and they don't know how to cope with what's actually driving behavior. That was a good voice crack there. And then it's like they don't know any other way of life. The system doesn't work, and most people that leave jail eventually come back or have multiple stints in prison. And I think that's a statistic that shows that the prison system doesn't work in getting people to stop committing crimes. And again, a lot of people, like, there's incentive to putting people in jail because it makes people money, which is, yeah, I think, messed up.
Well, it's privatized prison systems.
Right, exactly.
It's like, why do you have, my business is a prison. What do you do for a living? I run a prison.
A prison.
Okay.
The more people we have in there, the more money I make. More people are incarcerated, the more money I make. It seems backwards, but I understand why that system is set up the way it is. I don't understand how that happened, and you gotta generate revenue out of something. Having people not come to prison, having them be empty isn't gonna make anybody money. But if you're looking at it in that standpoint, I think we gotta do something about it.
I agree. I can agree with that.
I mean, I think U.S. is still number one in incarcerations per capita.
Oh yeah, I watch.
It's not even close.
I watch a lot of Vice videos.
Yeah,
and they talk a lot about that too. Just how America is compared, even in education and everything else. Like, we're number one in military, for sure.
Oh yeah, it's not even close to that either.
Our education has gone downhill.
It's like low. I think we're like low 30s.
And I think we're like 36 or something.
Something like
in
that.
In education.
Pretty bad.
And, yeah. That's why, I don't know. There's a lot of things that need to be looked at a little differently.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think I can see around the things that are happening there, where there's changes coming out. And we're slowly starting to move into a different direction, which is, I think, as a society, is good.
Yeah. I agree.
Because you can't just have the same system in place and expect, you know, that's what sanity is. Doing the same thing over and over and expecting
it's
a different result.
Yeah. Well, some people, the people that are in charge don't want a different result, though. That's the main thing you're fighting against.
Yeah.
And that's a little scary.
And see, and that's where a lot of times, depending on whether you're conservative or liberal, it all depends on how you, for one, process information that you hear, whether it's about whatever your beliefs are or what your opposing beliefs are, and being able to not argue about it, but understand it in a certain way, because that's how you have to have a certain level of understanding in order to formulate a better opinion, a more educated opinion.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I believe this. I understand that you feel this way. Maybe we can find some meat in the middle. You know, people aren't willing to do that because they're so eager to plant their flag, and I am this thing, and this is what I am. And we're right, and you're wrong. It's like, you can't do that.
I think that's a lot of it, too, is people place their identity in what they believe. And if someone is criticizing, or you could say attacking, because that's sometimes the case, but then they personally feel that they are lesser of a person. When really, I think you're just putting too much of yourself into it's what you believe. I think people take their ideologies a little too seriously. Sick.
I really hope the audio turns out for this.
I think it does. I hope it does too. That'd be a bummer.
I think we'll be all right.
I think we will too. But I think it's really, really annoying when people, like, your personality isn't your political way of thinking.
Yeah.
And it doesn't define you. I think when you put so much energy into it for something, I think other developmental traits fall to the wayside. It kind of blinds you a little bit. So putting value into other things is important, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at there. It's a little incoherent, but you know what? You've seen people like this that are...
They're extremely closed-minded.
Yeah, and very one-dimensional in terms of what value are you bringing to the world by being this, by being this way. I would argue not a whole lot. I would argue not a whole lot.
Yeah. I don't like arguing, because
I don't either.
For one, I don't like, because if I get into an argument, you know, and I start getting mad, and when I get mad, I get madder.
Yeah.
So you can't just stop it. You're just gonna get madder and madder, and then next thing you know, you're screaming at each other, and nothing's getting solved.
Exactly.
And But you have to understand why people feel that way too. At the same time, why people don't want to discuss.
Yeah.
Because they're so cemented in their beliefs that it's like it's so preposterous that you think differently or you think this. It's like, well, it's really not though.
Yeah.
It's like if only you can just articulate yourself properly and not be. I think the biggest issue is people being too extreme. A lot of extremism out there.
I think having a knee-jerk reaction to something is, I think, normal. I don't think it's good, but
yeah.
If something hits you one way, the polar opposite one way, trying to balance it out by reacting the other way is kind of what happens naturally. My dad is someone everyone kind of disagrees. Some people get. I'm kind of that person that went to college and, you know, became a little bit more left-leaning, and my dad is conservative. I obviously love my dad and have a good relationship with him, but I can understand why he feels the way he feels, because he can kind of, he has a line of thinking that, like, in his head makes sense. There's a progression there. And be like, okay, yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that, and I can see why you would place value on that and see why it works or why it doesn't work. And some people miss that. There are gaps missing, or they don't know how they got to point B, like where their point A even was, in terms of why they think the way they do. That's something I'm working on too. Sometimes just going with your gut is what a lot of people do too, which is fine. You should listen to that. But when I think that can kind of limit your scope as to what you see and what you experience.
Yeah.
It brings a little bit more balance, to your line of thinking. And also, it really tests, I think it makes your, if you still believe in what you believe at the end of the day, then you're stronger for it. Like, you've attacked it, you've seen it from different angles, and you still feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Then that's tested. You're good.
Yeah.
That's just what you think. So I think there's value in coming at it from both directions. And I think no one's gonna argue that.
Yeah.
I think it's easier said than done, and it's not something that I'm gonna be like, oh, I'm so good at this. I test my beliefs all the time, and I change my mind on a lot of things because of logic and reason. But no, I'm 24 years old. I don't have a whole lot of, I have some experiences with things, but I'm not going to sit here and say I know exactly how the world works when I think none of us have any idea.
Yeah, and I can definitely agree with you on that one. And that's where I struggle a lot of times, because, you know, I'm 24 as well.
Yeah.
So I know that I've not had a lot of experience as far as, like, worldly experiences, mm-hmm. but, you know, I am married, I do have children, and I do have a house.
Yeah.
So I'm an adult. I'm a full-fledged adult now.
Yeah.
But I know that I still have a lifelong of learning to do. Yeah. I think a lot of what causes the issue is people are afraid of change. And it's human That's nature true. To rest on your laurels and get lazy like that.
Mm-hmm. Path of least resistance.
I do that. Yeah, I do that a lot of times with learning new things. Because there's things I want to research. I'll hear about something in a podcast. It's like, oh, I need to look into that further. But I really don't, because I don't know why. I guess I'm academically lazy a little bit. I'm trying to push through that and get out of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I never went to college either. So, you know, I hear people that went to college and they got to learn a bunch of new stuff. And it's funny, in my family, that's what I always heard is, oh, you know, you go to college, you're going to turn you liberal. It's like, well, you make it sound negative. It's right. not so much turning liberal, it's more of opening your mind.
Yeah.
Because you got to think, I know friends that were completely different people after they came out of college. And just in the aspect of they're more open-minded about things.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you know, the way I was thinking before, it's kind of shitty. No, or it's exactly. kind of closed-minded.
I mean, before I went to Central, I mean, I graduated high school when I was 16. I went off to college.
Oh, really?
I was alone. Like, I was off on my own when I was 17. I was not financially independent by any means, but I was living on my own as a 17-year-old boy who was very insecure and who didn't have a lot of experience. I grew up in Tecumseh, Michigan, and I didn't have a lot of variety of people. I still have great friends that I hang out with all the time from Tecumseh. They're my best friends, but being able to experience other people, it made me see how much of a huge asshole I was.
Yeah.
And, like, I think a lot of people can look at me now and be like, wow, you are much more positive, you're just nicer, and you treat people better. At least this is how I feel about myself than you were when you were 19, 19, 20. And so I credit college being away and having roommates, you know. You need to do the dishes. You're being selfish. And then, yeah, that makes sense. I was being selfish. Or taking other people's considerations into effect. Or into consideration. And just hearing other people. I mean, they make you take, obviously, the world religions course. Or I took race, religion, and some other characteristic in America as a class at Central. And it was the first time in my life I had heard about Japanese internment camps in the United States.
Oh, really?
First, like, I was 20 years old, and I had a Japanese professor, and I was like blown away. I didn't think that happened in America. That's messed up. And it wasn't that long ago. Is a huge thing. Like people are still like they're still recovering from that. And I didn't know. So I can't keep that in effect when it comes to people's behavior. People were very, I can understand it with like Pearl Harbor and World War II, and people were very racist against Japanese people 60 years ago, like 70 years ago, and that's not that long ago, and those people raised children, and those people saw what their parents did, and were in, like, they learned from that, good or bad, which I would argue bad, as I think most people would.
Yeah.
And that's something I never knew of. So, yes, my college experience made me from a little bit more apathetic to a more liberal-leaning person, but that's not because my professors were all liberal and brainwashed and
you.
Told me there's no God, like that one horrible movie. What is it? I forgot. God is dead or whatever.
God's not dead.
Yeah.
I wanted to go watch it, but then I was like, nah.
I don't. Yeah.
That's another one of my big pet peeves is religious people.
Yeah,
really.
Like I'm not saying I'm not religious, but there's a really negative view of academics in America, people who make their career as college professors or researchers, and I don't quite understand it. Like these people are dedicated to knowledge and trying to give people better understandings of the way the world works, and they're looked down upon for doing that.
Oh yeah, I deal with that a lot in my field, being a machinist. College is the devil.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all these people get liberal arts degrees and
underwater basket
and,
weaving.
And it's I always hear the same thing, but it's like, I don't know. There's a lot of times I wish I would have went to college just to get that little bit of life experience.
No one can take your education away from you. I think education is very empowering. And college isn't for everyone. I'm not going to sit here and say everyone should go to college. I think more people go to college than should at this point in time, with trades being an excellent source of livelihood. Mr. Machinist over
yeah.
here. And then
there's definitely a lack of people. But it's a lot of... it's a balancing act, really. Because back in, you know, like the 80s and the 90s, everybody, you could go walk into any factory and have a job, and they would start you on an apprenticeship. And they basically put you through college courses. Which,
yeah.
Like my apprenticeship, it was learning about the trade. So it was like machine theory. We did a lot of math classes. So I did geometry, trig, algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Basically all stuff related to my career.
Yeah.
Is what it was. And back in like the 80s and 90s, they had so many people in apprenticeships that were doing that they didn't have positions open. And nobody was going to college because you could make such a great living in
right.
the trade. So then, now that they filled up, there were companies that stopped their apprenticeship programs because it's like, we have no space. We have no room for people to do this.
Did not know that.
So that's when college started to ramp up more and people started going to college more.
Yeah.
And so now that there's more of a lack in manufacturing because... I guess it was before the 80s and 90s, but a lot of the older generation are retiring now.
Yeah.
And it's leaving a huge disproportionate workforce because technology has advanced so much too.
Yeah.
Which is another thing.
The manufacturing sector.
So and
is
and
not as
the
important.
money, it's not what it used to be because of technology advancements. Mm-hmm. Because now we can do things a lot faster and a lot more efficiently.
Yeah.
With less, honestly, with less operator integration.
Sure.
Because now we have software that you can pretty much get a CAD model, a solid model, mm-hmm. of whatever part it is. You click on it, you hit a button, and it will basically what's called toolpath it for you. So it's basically where it's going to cut to make the part.
Okay, yeah.
It'll do that for you. Whereas, like, I don't have that access to that type of software, so I have to draw it out myself and program it myself.
Okay.
And I got to go to the machine, set it up, get it running. Where now, you know, machines, they can basically run themselves almost.
Yeah.
Basically, you're just there to watch it. So there's a big shift in just the way technology is taking over the manufacturing sector. And the jobs aren't going to be what they used to be.
True.
It's not going to be so much working in a tool room on using your hands, cranking handles.
Yeah.
Trigging stuff out on a piece of paper. I don't have to trig stuff out.
Yeah.
I can draw it on the computer, and it tells me angles, and it gives me everything that I need.
Exactly.
So it's, but that's, having that advancement, people want things done quicker.
Yeah.
And just with the way capitalism's gone, it's, they want everything cheaper, they want it faster. Well, that doesn't really go hand in hand. You can't have that. You can't make quality for cheap, and you can't make cheap quality, you know?
Exactly. No, I think that's an issue. But, like, you're always going to have plumbing.
There's always going to be a need for it.
There's always going to be a need for something at least like that. And then also that sort of... that sort of learning is just better. I mean, we talked about how people learn differently. That sort of learning, being able to use your hands and kind of seeing... I don't see... I can't build freaking, like, Lego sets at 24 years old. Give me an instructions with Legos, and I will be working on it for hours and not make any... My brain just doesn't work that way. Like, my brother, total engineer brain, can put things together, take things apart, yada, yada, yada. Me... I'm a little bit more, I'm kind of more academically, charged, I think, in the theoreticals a little bit better, but mechanically not inclined at all.
Machining is definitely not for everybody. I'm not the greatest at it, because I kind of ride the fence. I have a bit of the mechanical side, but I also have a bit of the academic side. But it might just be because I'm more open-minded, I guess, but I don't look down on people that go to college. And a lot of people in my trade do, because there's a big God complex to machining, because it is a very challenging career to do.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I do a lot of prototype machining, so I get a lot of, this is the first time this has ever been made. It's just been engineered, it's been drawn, now cool. Make it. And where I'm at, we eventually want to get to do aerospace work,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's some pretty precision work.
Yeah,
it's a lot. You know, like, a human hair has a thickness of 3/1000ths, which is 0.003 of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with tolerances a lot of times that are 5/10ths. So it's 0.0005.
Nice.
And it's, you know, you'd be surprised, just breathing on something changes it.
Yeah.
Just in precision wise.
Dang.
So it's cool, it's challenging, but it's very stressful. It's very exhausting mentally. It's not a physical job so much, other than standing on concrete for 10 hours a day.
Sure.
Which sucks, but it's the mental aspect of constantly thinking, okay, next step, what am I doing next?
Right.
And you gotta figure it out, and you gotta think, okay, if it's in the machine, I'm cutting it this way, how's it gonna react? And all material reacts differently, so it's cool.
Yeah.
But, like, I couldn't sit down and write a novel.
Right. Well, I think that's, if you're kind of mixed in terms of what your brain's good at, then I think that's an awesome field. I didn't really consider different things being as integrated with thinking in the abstract and thinking in the mechanical side, but I think that's a good balance of both. And nothing is for everyone. Either you don't like it or you're not good at it is a part of it. Nothing is for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I don't know if I will be a machinist forever.
Right.
I'll do it for a while, but just because I understand that there's more out there than just that.
Yeah.
There's, you know, I'm getting into podcasting. I want to eventually get into streaming. Not so much for a career path, if it takes off and it can become something successful, you know, maybe I can focus on that more. That's just about your mindset and what you want, what you value out of your life.
Right.
And I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Always. You always see what happens.
You, like Brandon and I talked about, you never know when that one little thing is going to change.
Oh, yeah.
And you could wake up tomorrow and everything would be completely different.
It's true. Have you had a moment like that?
I've had several.
Yeah.
I've had several reality checks.
Yeah.
And I've had certain things happen where my life definitely wasn't the same. So I'll give you a little bit of insight on me.
Let's
so
do it.
I'm a strong supporter of cannabis.
Yes.
Obviously. And I believe heavily in psychedelics.
Okay.
As far as for therapeutic purposes.
Yeah.
Personally, I did shrooms last year. And that's one of those things where my life was never the same afterwards. But
really?
it was a more positive effect.
Okay.
Because it's hard to explain it. I just did a podcast with Brandon the other day and we talked about it a little bit. Because he has his own podcast.
Okay.
He was asking me about it. He's like, what's it feel like? Is it like the same like when you smoke marijuana?
That was inefficient.
That was very inefficient.
One person on a bus.
But he said, you know, he's like, what's it feel like? Yeah, is it the same as cannabis or is it different? I'm like, no, it's kind of the same. You get kind of a head high and a body high. But I wasn't more focused on that. I was more focused on I felt connected to everything.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had a spiritual awakening, really, and it helped me kind of step back and objectively look at myself and look at where I'm at in my life currently.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you're doing this, you got to change that. You know that you're wrong for doing it. You kind of have like an internal battle with yourself. So, like, I grew up in a pretty toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stuck in that mentality. And I was stuck in that position where, you know, I used to be super ultra conservative. And I used to be, you know, I'm dedicated in my beliefs. There's nothing you're ever going to say that's going to change my mind. And, well, I started smoking weed, which opened my mind.
And gateway
it's it's a gateway drug to being a better person.
If it works for you,
it's not for everybody. Because right. There's people that
take it a little far.
But it's also, I think, it's not so much gateway drugs, it's just general curiosity.
Yeah.
Is what does that, but
that's mainly just a joke.
That's another story.
Since you're not on the you're not doing any hardcore drugs. You're good.
I've been offered cocaine several times, never done it.
I know
my limits as a person. I have an addictive personality.
Yeah.
And two, like uppers and stuff like that, I don't really mesh well with them.
I can't imagine.
I get kind of out of my mind. It's been offered to me. I'm like, yeah, I'll pass.
I had a couple of buddies that tried it, and they're like, it was awesome for like 10 minutes, and then they didn't do any more because like you're supposed to do more because it goes away really quickly, and they're like, I felt terrible for 10 hours just after that. But that's not the greatest ratio you're looking for.
I know people that will do it at parties. Stuff
yeah.
like that. They'll do it every once in a while, which, hey, that's, I don't care.
I don't care
it's,
either.
It's,
I wouldn't, I don't think I'd want to.
I mean, I wouldn't want someone coming over blowing lines on my counter.
No.
With my kids around or anything, but it's
I wouldn't personally want to be around it myself. But if you, like, I guess if you do it and it doesn't affect your life in any negative way, then that's cool. I don't think it's great for your health, unlike, I don't think it's great for your brain health, I should say.
No.
Where there have been benefits of psychedelics and marijuana helping with pain and that sort of thing. You're not subscribing or giving people cocaine to help with any issues they're dealing with.
Well, now there's, you know, there's a huge, since medical cannabis has been looked at so much more and is becoming a more prevalent thing, there's a lot of studies where the people are getting away from opiates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the big pharma thing, it's all kind of coming together. You know, that's why I was saying earlier, and now they're starting to decriminalize psychedelics, which I 100% agree with. Just from doing them, I mean, if you want to, a lot of it, just the same, it's the same with any sort of drug or medication that you do. Because I view cannabis and psychedelics as medication for your spirit and your soul. Also, there's a lot of good physical medical benefits to doing it. But as far as like psychedelics, the biggest thing is mindset. The mindset you have going into it, you're going to pull out of it what you want. Mm. But also, if you do a high enough dose, whatever you're like, I don't want to think about that. It's like, no, we're bringing it right in front and we're going to stare at it. We're going to have a look at the ugly side of yourself. And that's what the effect I had from it, because I actually had a bad trip.
Ooh.
So I locked myself in the bathroom and I sat in the shower and just in the dark, just going out of my mind. And I was stuck in this really dark place. And it's like, man, I kept saying, I just feel dirty, which is why I got in the shower. Because at first I was like, you know, this is great. I laid underneath a big tree in the backyard and I could hear the wind. I could hear kids playing. I could hear the birds chirping. I felt connected to everything.
Yeah.
And unless you've done it, it's you'll never understand it.
Sure.
You can't put it in words. You just have to experience it. Right. And I'm glad I got to experience it. I think everybody, and it's one of my personal beliefs, I think everybody should experience it at least once. Mm. At least a mild dose, just to understand. It kind of gives you an understanding of where you sit cosmically in the universe. So I understand the rat race, and we all got to go to work, make money, because we got to have everything to pay for. But it's like, it doesn't destroy me and consume me as much as it does other people. But it also, what I got from it was, it helped me realize where I stand with myself.
Yeah.
And it helped me realize what I value in myself and what I feel I deserve as a person. So it helped
right.
me.
Right. That
helped,
sounds good.
It helped me give me the energy to stand up to my dad. Really.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I was in a very toxic environment and I was creating that toxic environment in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to do that because my children deserve better.
Right.
And I don't want to raise them in the same circumstances that I was raised in. And, you know, my dad, he's just, like I said earlier, you got to understand people that are stuck. My dad's very stuck where he's at in his life.
Gotcha.
I can't fault him for it because there's a lot of people out there like that. But he was unable to rise from his tribulations. And I want to rise from mine. Whereas most of my life, if something bad happens, I would just dwell on it and stay there. It's like, you know, life sucks. Everything sucks.
Yeah.
I'm cursed and this is my life now. It's like, it's not like that. So, and when I had my experience, it made me realize that, hey, you feel this way because you're surrounded by this. You let the negativity and the toxicity infect your life. It's like a disease. It's a cancer. It really is. And so doing that helped me to finally be like, okay, it's time to do it. You know, it's time to finally stand up. And I've had to cut several people out of my life.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but as a person, you have to be willing to continue to grow. You can't.
Right.
You can't hold yourself back for somebody that's not willing to grow with you.
Yeah. You can't fix other people.
And it's really not our job to fix other people. It has to come from inside.
Yeah.
And that's the mindset I went into doing psychedelics, was that mindset. It's because I read a lot of studies. I did a lot of studying before I did it because I heard bad things and I heard good things. It's like, well, you know, I finally decided I'm going to try it just to see what happens. And at first, I had a bad experience while doing it, but it's always the after effect is always a positive. You can always pull something positive out of it. It helped me shift my mindset.
Interesting.
So I definitely, and it helped me, you know, start going to therapy and stuff like that. And it's made me really focus more on myself and my own self-health.
Gotcha. I mean, I think if psychedelics allow a person to kind of take a step back and look at their current status and see what needs to be fixed, then I think that's valuable. In terms of, like, I think a lot of people have that with therapy itself. I mean, I go to counseling once a month, just to kind of talk, and it helps out. I've never done psychedelics. Hasn't really been huge interest of mine. But I do try and think about where I am and what I'm doing, what my status is.
Oh yeah, I'm not, you know, you don't have to do psychedelics to have a spiritual awakening. But right. It's that thing everybody learns differently.
Yeah.
It's definitely not for everybody, because there's actually been a lot of people that have committed suicide while doing psychedelic trips.
That is scary.
And it's really easy to get caught in a bad trip.
Yeah.
It's if one little negative thing, like when I was doing it, that's kind of what set mine into a negative experience while I was in it, is because the house wasn't spotless like I like it to be, because I just got home from camping and I had the day off of work, and the house was clean, but I had the smallest little things that had to be finished putting away and stuff like that. I was just like, I'll get to it later. Well, I was walking around and I wanted to clean the house, and I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. Or it's like, oh, I'm going to do this. But there was something telling me, like, just go outside. Just be outside. Don't worry about this. You're getting away from this. This is what you're doing. You're getting away from this to focus on you.
Yeah.
Don't focus on everything else. Focus on you. So then that's when I went outside and actually started walking around barefoot. And I don't know if you know about it, it's called grounding.
Yeah.
I do that pretty much every morning. I get up and I work on breathing exercises while I do it. And it's been one of those small changes I've made in my life just to make a small effect that has a little bit more impact every day.
Yeah.
So I try to do that. I can work on some breathing exercises when I get up in the morning, and it kind of helps me prep myself for the day.
I like that. I'm a huge fan of being barefoot.
Yes.
Huge fan.
I used to train barefoot.
Yeah. I do as much as I can.
Yeah, because I felt it helped me improve on my balance.
Yeah, and you have a lot of muscles and stuff in your feet that shoot the modern American footwear. Kind of cripples the foot a little bit and bounds it up, and everyone's toes are going in at an angle, and they can't use their feet as they're supposed to. So I'm a big fan of freeing the dogs.
Yeah.
Letting the dogs out. Oh man, that's a good one.
So what really got you interested in sports science? I know you said you did basketball and.
Yeah, so I mean, I really liked playing basketball and playing tennis. I did. I wasn't very good either. At my sports, skill was there, but my mental aspect and. Physical attributes weren't ideal either. So I was dating someone, and we broke up, and she started dating someone that was more muscular than me, so I got really insecure and started lifting weights myself my first year at college, and put on like 20 pounds my first like 3 months lifting. Felt super jacked, even though I was 150 pounds and not jacked at all. But you know, the newbie gains
as
you go around. And I was gonna be go into sports broadcasting. That was my sports journalism was a thing. I wrote for the school paper. I did all the sports articles and that sort of thing. Really, really liked that. And then I decided, you know what? I don't really like deadlines. I don't want anyone to. Like, I don't want to write something at 2 a.m. and have it need to be done that night after a sporting event happens. It sounds awful. And then I was like, you know, I don't even really like journalism at all, because I can't add a whole lot of... I can't add flair to it. I guess reporting on sports is just like these stats happened, and I asked these questions and got these answers. It was... You can be good at it, you can be bad at it, it just didn't interest me. So I was like, you know what, my mom's told me I'd be a great lawyer, so let's try this pre-law thing. And I went and it's like, I found out what starting as an attorney meant, and it's mainly reading through case after case after case after case, and it's so much reading, and then a lot of long hours, and it seemed a little soul-sucking. So I was like, and I have to pay to go to school. I have to have these amazing grades too. There's a lot of pressure. But like, I don't want to do that. I really like English. I really like literature. Maybe I'll be a high school English teacher. I really like teaching. I've always been a coach. Like, I volunteered with Parks and Rec in Tecumseh. I had coached a lot of, youth soccer, youth basketball, youth floor hockey. I really like that. It was a lot of fun for me. So, I like the aspect of teaching. So, English Lit, I like this a lot. And that, but kind of as I was exercising, as I was getting stronger, this is something I'm really passionate about. And I didn't really have this growing up. So maybe I want to do more of this. So, I had kind of a change of thought. This was all, that thought process of transitioning between journalism, law, and English was all 1 year, by the way. That was at my first year at Bowling Green.
I hear that happens a lot.
It does, and luckily it didn't affect my credits too much. Otherwise, I'd been really screwed. So I went to Jackson, started taking more science classes that I needed. I went to Central. First started in athletic training, so the people that wear khakis and are out on the field and they monitor injuries. Really awesome position. I have a really good friend who's an athletic trainer. But I don't want to help people come back from injuries. I want to prevent injuries and help people get stronger and faster. So went from athletic training to exercise science, where I finally ended up. Really liked the classes. Really liked what I was learning. And I found myself wanting to learn more than what I was kind of doing in class. So I decided to stick with that. And the reason I was kind of into English was I didn't have a good English teacher really in high school. And I kind of felt like, all right, I'm going to teach English. I'm going to be a good English teacher. And I liked it. So I was part of it. Same with this. I didn't really have a good sports performance coach or strength and conditioning coach. I had that kind of what we talked about. Go lower.
I was smack you on the head, make you squat. Yeah. I see a lot of people doing that with powerlifting.
Yeah.
Guys come up and start smacking the face while you squat. It's like, dude, I got 900 pounds on my back. Please do not smack
me. Don't smack me in the face.
It's I get it. That, that intense sudden jolt. It's just like, and you push through it. You have that push, but, like we talked about earlier, that's where a lot of injury starts to happen.
Well, when you're 15 and you're squatting 135, you just need to do that right. Make sure your movement's right before you, have that intensity. So I was like, I'm gonna try and fix this. And the obesity thing was something that I'm really passionate about too, is we're not healthy as Americans, and exercise is a big part of it.
Lot of it, though, and that's why, when bodybuilding, when I was doing that, a lot of it, they always said, it's mainly all diet. You can train your heart out and train all day, every day, which is more detrimental than helpful.
Yeah.
But you can train properly, you can do the best workouts, you can have gains, you can increase strength and movement and stuff like that, but people still have a stomach. It's like it's diet. You're kind of cheating yourself out of true gains that you could actually have.
Yeah.
Just with proper diet. Without doing proper diet.
Diet's the hard part.
And it's definitely the hard part. Well, it's because of processed food and everything and how addictive it is. Because I love to eat, I like eating garbage food.
Yeah.
Because I like the nice feeling it gives me in my brain and in my belly.
I wake up feeling
like shit the next day, or I go to the gym and I try to work out. It's like, man, I just feel so empty and out of shape. And I'm not that bad out of shape.
No.
but I just need to be more dedicated about going to the gym.
Yeah, and I mean, so that's kind of a something I wanted to help with. I wanted to help kind of give people a more positive relationship with their health and fitness, and not view exercise as a punishment. Like, oh, I ate, because you hear it, like, oh, I had McDonald's yesterday, I need to work that off, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, this, it's more than like just, you're punishing yourself, right, for making a poor decision. You know, you made your poor decision, like, move on from it, and, right, like, do better. Like, it does, doesn't matter.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's going back on your laurels. It's just the laziness about it.
I mean,
it's human nature.
It is.
You know, if I do this, I can make it up this way.
Yeah.
It's like, or you can just not do it and just continue to make up and not. Because you take a step forward, then you take a step back. And you take a step forward, then you take a step back. So
yeah,
you're never moving forward. You're just always going to be stuck in limbo.
Yes. And that therein lies the very challenging part of getting people healthier as a coach. And then high school kids. I mean, as a high school kid, I had Taco Bell and Mountain Dew. I mean, I played Call of Duty, so
yeah.
I ate Doritos, and, you know, I had Wendy's, and, but my dad, I also had the benefit, my dad was a chef, so he knew how to prepare food, and we were pretty focused on, you know, you're eating vegetables every day, you're gonna eat fruit every day, and you're gonna eat, like, high quality proteins and high quality dairy and eggs and stuff. That's one thing I don't mess with is low quality dairy or low quality eggs.
Because
I think that's not great on your system. I feel a difference when I have higher quality food in me. But
yeah, what about like organic food?
I think some food is like necessary for you to have organic. I can't think off the top of my head what they are. Some food is more necessary than others, and like the research kind of shows that it doesn't matter a whole lot in terms of nutrition, like the vitamins that you're getting. You could maybe make an argument about pesticides and other compounds, but if you're sacrificing your budget to go organic, then, and you're not actually getting like the nutrients that you need, then you should not do that. You should just get your vegetables, whether they be frozen, or get your nutrients whether they be frozen or fresh.
Yeah, the core,
organic,
the core,
non-organic.
The core like benefits are still there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of like if you're not dieting correctly, you're not going to gain from exercise. You're not going to get all the proper benefits from like frozen vegetables or stuff, but they're still getting some.
Oh,
still getting vegetables.
No, absolutely. And then a lot of frozen or canned vegetables are still awesome. They're still really, really good. And the main thing is to still eat, you know, foods that have color to them, and avoiding things that are in the center of the grocery store versus around the outside, that sort of thing. I'll still eat processed, enriched bread, but I'm not someone who needs to lose weight at this moment in time.
Yeah.
I'm
well,
not someone.
Well, so you're disciplined enough to limit what you intake.
Exactly. Too. Like, I'll have something that's not great for me, and I'll be very objective about it. Like, this is not the best choice for me right now. But I mean, at where I work, we use the 80-20 rule. Like, if 20%, or if 80% of your nutrition is good, it's on point, then the other 20% won't really matter as much, and you'll be able to sustain that. The best diet is the one that you're going to do. The best workout plan is the one that you yourself are going to do.
Yeah.
That's a Stan Efferding. He's a powerlifter, bodybuilder guy that I like to follow a little bit. If it's not sustainable for you, then it does no good.
Right.
Adherence is the science. If you can adhere to it, then you're going to be fine. If you can't, then you got to find something else.
Yeah. I know at the gym, you guys definitely make it fun.
Yeah.
We have more fun than just, you know, going into the, because I'm from the era. I'm from the part of training and stuff like that where it's, you're in the dungeon in the dark.
Gold's gym. Yeah.
You know,
pumping iron. Yeah.
Yeah. With the free weights.
Barbells and chalk and...
I didn't use chalk.
Grunting. I see. Well, see, I'm a fan of that too. I'm a fan of that too for myself. But our clients are mainly in their 50s and 60s, and some of them are 70s. They don't need to do that.
They walk out smacking their legs. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not gonna hit our like university professors in the face before they go and do like a TRX row. You know, it's a little insane, but. Yeah, everyone kind of needs to do what they want to do long term. If it's not long term, then it's not gonna work. Yeah, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, and you know, I think as an individual, you just gotta be willing to accept that. Okay, I'm trying this; it's not working out for me. Maybe they can try this instead. It's kind of like how martial arts is. You know, I know a lot of people do jiu-jitsu, and they're not very good at it, but they still like martial arts, so they'll move to something else or a different kind of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's got their thing that they can excel in. But you just, you have to be willing to be able to go out and experience everything.
Yeah, you gotta go.
Biggest thing, and one of the little quotes I try to tell myself and remember is, before I can get good at something, I have to be willing to be bad at it first.
My favorite is that, but the sooner the sooner you start sucking at something, the sooner you stop sucking at something. Yeah.
That's true. I mean,
you're gonna suck. Like, I started as a coach, I sucked. I started as a power lifter, I sucked. I still feel I kind of suck. I'm stronger than, like, the average person, but average power lifter, I'm still pretty mediocre. But I really, really like doing it. So if I keep going at coaching, if I keep trying my best, and I'm gonna stop sucking at some point. Yeah. And that's just how it goes. And podcasting, you even said you weren't super satisfied with the first one, and everything grows from doing.
Well, it's you gotta be able to self-reflect. Mm-hmm. But not be so critical about it.
Yeah,
you gotta be objective, like, okay. Because, like, when I did my first podcast, I listened over to it while I was editing. I noticed little things that I did, and it's like, man, I should work on that. But instead of being like, man, I sound like an idiot, I just suck,
yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, now I'm aware that I do this, so I need to be more...
Proactive
at making sure that I'm not doing it, and I'm articulating myself better.
Mm-hmm. For sure. No, for work, I'll make videos going over, like, cueing techniques or exercises you can do if you're sore, whatever. I videotape myself doing things. And I'm very, very uncomfortable in front of a camera. I just get instantly sweaty. Same thing with, like, answering the phone or talking on the phone. I'm very, very nervous just whenever I do that. It's kind of very anxiety-inducing for me. So... just kind of made myself, all right, you gotta start making videos. This is just kind of the next step, something you have to do. So I've made a couple, and they've gotten better with each one. They're still not great, but kind of just realizing that was important. And then making the start.
That first step is always the hardest.
Yeah.
But once you get there, as long as you can just keep the momentum moving, you're all right.
Yeah, and not being so critical that it paralyzes you. Oh, there's a nice gust of wind.
Have you noticed any, both as far as anxiety or anxiety goes, have you noticed any sort of benefit from exercising and training to where it's helped your anxiety in a way?
Yeah. So there was a point where I was working out to impress others and not for, like, myself. I find when I train to be very spiritual, honestly, it sounds kind of nerdy, but I find it to be an enlightening experience when I train.
Well, I do too.
So, like, that once I kind of reach that point, instead of trying to be like, oh, I'm gonna get so many hot chicks because I'm so much more jacked now, and it's like, no, Austin, girls didn't like you because you were skinny. They didn't like you because you were, you know, an ass.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was.
Yeah, kind of once I figured that out. And it's like, you know, I still really like working out, even though it's not for other people. I think that's when it started to help my anxiety a little bit, is when I could use it as an outlet, as opposed to getting something that I wanted or that I thought that I wanted. Just doing it because I enjoyed it was helpful.
And yeah.
So that's something I deal with, is anxiety, depression. A lot of people do. And that's it's been very helpful. Just something to focus my energy on, doing something physical.
Yeah, I know that was a key thing for me when I was in high school, because I also struggled with depression and pretty crippling anxiety.
Yeah.
And crippling depression, actually.
Yeah.
But I've always had a really bad temper, because so when I would get really, really mad, a lot of times I would just start training, and I would work out, and I would get that rush of endorphins and everything else, and it's like I'm taking out my energy, I'm taking my negative energy, and I'm turning it into a positive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I'm pissed off about something, but I'm lifting weights, and yeah, I may be mad and steaming about it, but I'm getting the benefit of training and doing the tear and repair and helping gain. But I think a lot of people, that's why they get into training and lifting weights, because they want to impress other people.
It's so true.
And I had this thought the other day. I think a lot of what started bodybuilding and training is a lot of insecurity, for one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no one wants to pick on the big guy.
Yeah.
Because he's stronger than you and he can kick your ass, but, which isn't always the case.
Right.
I know a lot of big meatheads that can't do
that. That can't do anything, right.
But, and that's, you know, that's where, something that I never really did that I've been doing a lot more recently is stretching.
Yeah.
Because I was never really good at stretching.
Yeah.
Somehow I'm still decently flexible, but.
Yeah. I couldn't touch my toes before I started at Mission. I was so inflexible. And now I can touch my toes really easily.
Yeah.
But that was something as an exercise science grad, I knew I had to do it, but I just didn't. And I didn't move well. Everything kind of hurt.
Yeah.
And now being more mobile is pretty important. And stretching has got good benefits for your brain, too. Kind of helps you decompress and relax.
I've been thinking about getting into yoga in a form.
Yeah.
Just for doing, as like a therapeutic thing.
Yeah.
Just doing movement. That's something I want to focus more on now as I've gotten older. Getting away from the picking it up, moving heavy weight, putting it back down.
Slamming it down, yeah.
Slamming and grunting.
Yeah.
But I want to focus more on functional strength and being able to move properly without, because I'm kind of clumsy. A lot of times I stumble. So, that's probably where Molly gets it from. But I noticed in doing different types of training, I'm more able to, like I said, do things around the house and do yard work, whereas before I would get winded. Like, I had the strength to do it, but it's like, man, I feel weak.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing different movements than I'm used to doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's helped my posture, and it's helped me mentally a little bit.
Yeah.
Just
awesome, man.
But it's, you know, it's all about growth.
Yeah, I think having seen a lot of, I get mainly males that I get this from, is males in their 20s, 30s, 40s. They lifted weights in high school, and that was the best times of their lives. And it's like they felt better. That's when they looked the best. It's when they're cranking out weights. And they still want to do that now. They still want to do power cleans. They still want to bench press real heavy. It's like, all right, you can't put your arm behind your back. Like, you're not going to clean. You're not going to be able to bench. You need a new goal. And having, you're not going to look like Arnold. You're not going to look jacked. But I tell you what, you might be able to reach for a plate on the top shelf without a shooting pain going up your arm. Like,
yeah.
So, I think a lot of that comes from ego of, like, man, this is when I was best. And this is
the glory days.
This was the glory days, man. And I need to get back to that. And I can understand that. But you gotta start looking at what's gonna bring more value to your life, and I think having adaptive goals is really important. Because at some point, I'm gonna have to hang up my shot at shooting for a really high powerlifting total. it's not going to go on forever. I'd like to be able to still deadlift and squat and bench when I'm, you know, until I die. Yeah. But I'm not going to hit the same numbers at 80 that I hit at 25.
No, and that's true too. You gotta know your limits and not let your pride and your ego and everything get in the way.
Yeah, as I think that's a pretty big issue.
And that's, going back to the psychedelics thing real quick. That's something that a lot of people have when they do large doses of psychedelics. They have ego death. Mm. So it's basically you feel like you're dying, really when that's happening, but you come out of it like almost refreshed. Mm. It's made me a less judgmental person, and also training in general. It's doing that kind of helped me look at everything I do in my life differently. So that's why I started training differently. Cause it's like, okay, I can lift weight, I can move heavy weight, I can put numbers up for my size and my weight that are pretty good. But it's like I can't, I don't feel like I'm the best I can be.
Yeah.
So that's why at the gym we use kettlebells and stuff like that. Like I never liked squatting. I always had good solid legs, I always had a good solid base, but I never liked throwing the bar on my back, doing squatting, because I always had bad knees. Mm-hmm. And so using like front squats and doing kettlebell squats, stuff like that, it's helped my legs develop a lot more. I've gotten a lot more strength in my legs, and I focus a lot more on not being such a meathead and just, even at work, like grabbing something heavy and just moving it. I used to just do that because it's like, oh, I'm so strong, I can do this.
I can do it however I want, yeah.
And now, I make sure I'm lifting more with my legs and not my back.
Yeah.
And I'm making sure that if I start to feel tense in my back because I have, back pain, I make sure I stretch out and I got to take a seat, I'll take a seat.
Yeah.
And, just it's knowing your limits is the biggest thing. That's the best way to avoid injury.
Yeah, that's definitely it, and kind of being more aware. I mean, good technique doesn't just need to take place when you're working out; it needs to take place everywhere, absolutely everywhere. That's, your body doesn't know the difference.
And that's the big thing that I've always loved about training is the discipline about it. Because having the background in wrestling and learning the discipline with diet and exercise there and training, I help carry that into my training ritual at home or when I would go to the gym and train. And now I've collectively adapted it to be in this style of training, doing more functional training. So it's all good.
It is.
I think we'll wrap it up then.
Sweet.
Well, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me, man. It's always good to chat with you.
It is good. It's like I said, there's a lot of people out there that, whether other people find them interesting or not, I find pretty much everybody interesting to a certain extent.
This podcast is for you, man.
It is. I'm the inquisitive gentleman.
That's you.
All right. We'll wrap it up.
Cool.